This week on the show, we start peeking ahead at what's coming up with the NFL offseason, what happened to fighting in hockey, and NBA players starting to move as the trade deadline approaches. We have it all for you. Calling It starts right now. And welcome into Calling It, another episode. I am Alex Barth. Thank you for joining us. We're lucky enough to be joined on the phone by Mike Reese. Mike covers the Patriots for ESPN. Mike, thank you for joining us during your well-deserved time off here post-Super Bowl.
Well, happy to do it, Alex. This game here, this Super Bowl, was one of my favorites. And I say I can talk about it today, tomorrow, and probably every day the rest of the year.
So what was it, the greatest Super Bowl of all time then? I feel like there's a lot of contention around that point. It's been the discussion. Was this the not just the greatest Super Bowl, was this the greatest football game of all time?
Well, not to me. You know, I didn't think it was a great game, but I thought that it was the best comeback and the best finish that I've ever seen. But in terms of the game itself, mid-third quarter, I wasn't thinking like, oh, this is one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time. I mean, the Patriots weren't playing that well, so... From a game perspective, I look at it and say, yeah, I can't put it at the top of the list. But, you know, I say from a comeback perspective and from a can you believe what we just saw perspective, that's about as good as it gets.
Definitely don't remember the last time I was that entertained. Well, as Bill Belichick said, after the Super Bowl, teams 5 weeks behind, they got to get it going. And now here they are in the offseason. And Mike, you had a piece on Monday about kind of just stacking up where all the players were in the offseason. The big question is Dont'a Hightower, a guy who is not just one of the Patriots' biggest free agents, but probably one of the biggest upcoming free agents in the NFL. Seems like this is a textbook situation for the franchise tag when a team would use it, exact reason you'd want to do it. Will Dont'a Hightower get the franchise tag? Is he destined to hit the open market, or will the Patriots lock him up before it gets there?
Alex, this is a tough one because Dont'a Hightower, to me, is a guy that you don't want to have leave your team. But the franchise tag is $14.5 million on a one-year term. That's a lot of money on your cap. It's a lot of money for him as a player. I mean, any long-term extension he might sign is going to be probably in the $10 to $12 million a year range. So you're already above that on the franchise tag. So I think that's a little bit of a challenge in terms of whether the team can absorb that. That being said, you know, they have tagged players in the past with the intention of trying to work out a long-term deal, and maybe that's part of the thought process there with that. Very interested to see how it unfolds, because as I watched the second half of that Super Bowl, I thought Dont'a Hightower showed that he was the best defensive player the Patriots had on that field in that game, and he delivered in the clutch moment. That to me, that's the type of championship player you need to keep on your team.
And at what point, he said he wants to take his time with this process, at what point do the Patriots and maybe their fans start to worry he might not be coming back? If a deal's not done, say, beginning of March, you know, once free agency hits, when should fans and the team maybe start to worry that he's headed somewhere else?
So, well, I would say start with the whole franchise tag thing. Now, this week, you can start to put the tag on players, and if they don't put the tag on them, then I think you start to maybe raise the level of worry, if you will, from a standpoint of, okay, you know, they're going to take their chance on the open market that they're going to be able to compete with another team that's out there that might be willing to throw some crazy money at them. So I'd start there with the whole tag situation. Because if they tag him, he's here. I don't see anyone signing him to an offer sheet and, you know, him, you know, yielding the compensation that the Patriots would get if that happened. So start with that. And then once it gets to market, I mean, we know anything can happen on the open market. The Devin McCourty situation from a couple years ago is a good one, because they didn't tag him. And then they get into this competitive bidding situation with the Jaguars, the Eagles, and the Giants. They end up paying big money for Devin McCourty, you know, that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise wanted to pay. Maybe that's the way the situation heads with Hightower. So a lot of different dynamics in play, but I'd say start here with the tag to see if they use that and maybe give themselves a little more leverage in that process.
And if he does hit the open market, you look at his former counterpart, Jamie Collins, Patriots parting ways with him because they didn't want to pay him, quote, Vaughn Miller money. Is Hightower a guy that on the open market could get a look in the territory of Von Miller money, top linebacker in the league money?
That seems high to me. You know, Von Miller is in a different class the way I view it. But you know what they say? You know, it only takes one. And there have been some crazy deals in free agency when you get to the open market. And a lot of times those teams end up regretting those deals, you know, down the line. But sometimes teams are desperate and they're willing to throw the cash around. So I would say I'd be surprised if Hightower is in that range of Von Miller. But if free agency has taught us anything over the years, it's you never quite can tell what's going to happen in an open market situation, because all it really takes is one team to blow them out of the water.
And the next big name is Malcolm Butler. And his situation is very unique. I don't remember the last time a player of his caliber was in that situation. What are the odds that he's not back in New England next year?
Well, I'd be very surprised if that's the case. So here's the situation. In a restricted free agent, you know, situation like he is, you know, the Patriots going to tender him at the highest level, which is going to be a first-round tender. And by doing that, they basically ensure he's going to be back, because another team will not only have to sign Malcolm Butler to an offer sheet, but have to sign him to an offer sheet that the Patriots wouldn't match. And if the Patriots decided they didn't want to match it, they would get a first-round pick in return. So usually a team is generally pretty well protected in that situation. But I look at it this way. You know, I mean, you don't want Malcolm Butler taking a free agent visit to any other team. Like, this is a guy, you found him. He's done everything that you could ask for and more over the last 3 years, and shows no signs of declining. If anything, he's getting better. Albeit with a couple notable struggles in the Super Bowl, but every corner is going to have that over time. Darrelle Revis had those, you know, in his career when he was in his prime as well. So to me, that's one of those situations where even though he's a restricted free agent, there might be a little more urgency for the Patriots to try to get a longer-term deal done this year, you know, before they would have him in an unrestricted situation next year.
And that would leave Martellus Bennett as the other big-name free agent. Sounds like he wants to go out, get his money, get paid. With his uncertainty around Rob Gronkowski, with his injury situation, the Patriots, it looks like, will need to go after a tight end in the offseason. Do you see them doing that through the draft, through free agency, or will they just try to keep Bennett and Gronkowski together somehow?
It'd be nice to keep Bennett around, but that's probably one of those situations where, you know, he tests the market and sees what another team is willing to pay. And you'd think that they'll probably be at a higher level than what the Patriots feel like they can do, given that they have Rob Gronkowski already in the fold. And you got to worry about dynamics if you start paying Bennett more than Gronkowski. And the Patriots usually are pretty in tune with that type of situation. So that's one where I would brace for his departure. I think the idea that he might be back is probably, in my view, less than 50-50. In terms of odds. So I would say on Bennett, oh, hold on 1 second here. We got an interruption. Nathan, you want to say hello on the radio? I want you to go work it out with Talia, okay? You be that referee. That's what we have. That's what we have in this household. You know, we have a penalty flag.
Hey, that's so great. No days off applies to parenting too, Mike. I totally get it.
No, there you go. Perfect. No doubt about that. So, but on the Bennett, that's what I would say. Less than 50-50, you know, odds on that for me, just based on the dynamics of Kelsey, and also, you know, he's going to be the top tight end on the market.
So in terms of the replacement, the next guy on the depth chart, it looks like there's maybe Rob Hausler, and then you're going to have Micah Williams coming back from the torn ACL. Does the next tight end come from, does it come externally? Is it going to be maybe a free agent, maybe through the draft?
You know, that's a position Belichick loves, right? And I hear it's a good draft year for the position. So it would make a lot of sense to think that they try to go young at that position, you know, in the draft. They're going to try everything, whether it's a trade. Like, who saw Martellus Bennett coming last year, right? So they'll explore all avenues. I think one thing we know for sure, Belichick loves that position.
Do you think there's any chance that the franchise tag could fall on Martellus Bennett, or is there anybody besides Hightower you could see Belichick maybe using the tag on this year?
I think I'd be surprised at that. It's just the tag's not really – it used to be advantageous for teams. I mean, the Hightower thing, I'm really interested in just because that number is so high. at $14.5 million. And going back to Wes Welker, you know, they almost regretted using it on him when the number was at $9.5 million. So I don't see it for anyone else. I guess we could say, you know, you never say never, but it seems to me like it would be Hightower and no one else.
Mike, it looks like the Patriots have a chance this year if they want, between the pick they already have, the Jimmy Garoppolo situation, and like you talked about earlier with Malcolm Butler tendering him with the first round pick. The Patriots could have, if they wanted to, it seems like, as many as three picks in the first round. Do you see them picking multiple times in the first round this year?
Oh, I always say in the draft for the Patriots, the only thing that we can guarantee is that there's going to be a lot of trades with Bill Belichick. I think the most amazing stat is that in his 17 drafts with the team, there was only one draft that he didn't make a single trade. And if I recall off the top of my head, it was in 2004. So this guy loves to wheel and deal. And whether they pick three players, two players, one player in the first round, however it shakes out, I always say, like, head on a swivel, because Bill Belichick loves the draft. He loves to wheel and deal, and he'll always have a plan and be ready to execute it.
I'm not sure how much you've looked at the draft coming up, but a couple mock drafts as of right now have Jabril Peppers, the highly touted safety out of Michigan, falling all the way to 32 to the Patriots. Do you see that being realistic, and him getting to 32? And is there a chance the Patriots take a safety? It seems to be a position they're really deep at.
Oh, they would. I think they would love it. And I'll be honest, like, I'm just coming off this Super Bowl run and this high of the whole experience, so I haven't even got into the draft. But I did watch him play, specifically against Ohio State in that unforgettable game, right? And I looked at that, and when I watched him, I said, that looks like a Patriot-type guy. Like, if they could ever get him, you know, I think that they would love that. So here's the thing about safeties, let's not even say safety, like versatile defensive backs for the Patriots, right? And Belichick, this is a sub-package game. And so, like, Daron Harmon, their third safety, played 50% of the defensive snaps this year, even though the first two safeties were healthy the whole year. And that tells you how he views that position as almost like a starting caliber player. Like, that's why they picked Jordan Richards in the second round out of Stanford 2 years ago, or Tavon Wilson in the second round out of Illinois in 2012. A lot of picks that, like, people would, you know, between Tavon Wilson and Jordan Richards, Daron Harmon, picks that, like, players, like, people looked at and said, man, that's a strange pick. What's he doing there? Well, it shows how he values, you know, sort of versatile defensive backs who can play that sub-package game. And so I think if that was a scenario, like, they would love that with the Patriots.
One last question for you, Mike, not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but as you start looking towards next season, the Patriots will host the opening game Thursday night in Foxborough. Atlanta's on the schedule as the home team. You have the Texans as a home team. Could be a possible playoff rematch. Any indication on who we'll see that first Thursday night in September?
Well, I thought it would be a slam dunk to put Arizona in there, right? Like, I mean, not Arizona, Atlanta in there, because after the Super Bowl, it'll be similar to what we saw this year with Carolina and Denver. And, like, we're talking, like, this Super Bowl going to be talked about all offseason. Like, how great would that be to start next season with the last game we saw in an unforgettable Super Bowl the prior season? But, you know, it was interesting reading Peter King of the MMQB.com, who's so widely respected in our field, and he seemed to think, like, well, maybe that wasn't the best matchup, you know, to put out there based on, you know, Carolina didn't really like having to do that again this year. So maybe the league looks at a team like Kansas City as a good matchup to open the season, because they maybe don't want to waste that Super Bowl rematch on opening night when you know you're going to get huge ratings regardless. So I think one thing, we don't know who the opponent's going to be, but we know it's going to be compelling regardless, because that could be Roger Goodell's first return to Gillette Stadium since Deflategate 2 years ago, right? So isn't that interesting? Like, that'll be fun. It's almost like the opponent's secondary to the Roger Goodell storyline.
And that will be, that will give many interesting storylines in September. Mike Reese, no days off as always. We thank you for taking the time.
Well, I have to thank you for letting Nathan have his time on the show, because he always wants to get in there, and he tells me, Dad, you're still talking about football? Like, can we can we be done with football now? And I tell him, it's like, football never ends. You know, we're going to talk about it all year.
We'll make sure we get him on soon. He can talk about whatever he wants.
That's awesome. No, you did great. I really appreciate you taking the time with me, and I look forward to doing it again in the future.
Mike Reese of ESPN, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
And welcome back to Calling It, now joined by Jimmy Young, sports director of Snap Call Sports. Going to talk some hockey as we hit the back half of the season, Jimmy, and the hottest team right now in the NHL just might be the Boston Bruins after firing their head coach. They've rolled off three wins in a row. They look like an offensive juggernaut, especially from the blue line. The question everybody wants the answer to, can this last?
Can it last? Of course it can last, because it's a different type of philosophy behind the bench. Claude Julien coached not to lose a game. This guy, Bruce Cassidy, is coaching to win the game. If that means scoring more goals than the other team, by the way, duh, right? But Claude Julien's system just didn't work with this group of kids, this group of players. And I think that's another reason why they bring Bruce Cassidy in, because he's comfortable working with young kids. And Claude Julien obviously was not. And they probably should have done this, if not a month or two ago, a year ago. But it's done, move on, well, and now they're playing well. And by the way, a much better type of hockey.
That's what kind of befuddles me, is there was apparently a clause in Claude Julien's contract that if he coached 57 games this year, it kicked in a one-year extension on the contract. He coached 55 games. So did they just want to get every little drop they could out of this guy before firing him? Or why, aside from the fact that it was during the Patriots parade and how disrespectful that was to the city, the fans, the media, and everybody.
What a bad PR move.
What a terrible move. And they did say there was a tight window they could do it, but they could have done it the day before.
There was a couple of tight windows over the last month or two that
right,
they could
exactly.
have done
Exactly. They could have done it weeks before. Why, Ned? The team was playing well. They played a couple good games previous to him being fired. Why now? Again, it's terrible direction from this team, and it's a shame, because Cam Neely, who was adored in Boston for so many years, his name's starting to get dragged through the mud a little bit. It looks like you have Danny Ainge over with the Celtics, and he gets compared to Cam Neely a lot because similar positions, same town, both former players. Cam Neely's not really living up to Danny Ainge right now.
No, and I also think what Cam tried to do with 98.5, the Sports Hub, ended up working against him. He wanted to be proactive, so he showed up with questions ready to go. And I have not heard that interview, but I understand that Mr. Felger kind of took him to task.
Well, I did hear the interview. One of Neely's quotes during the interview was that he doesn't like dealing with the media because it's difficult. But I'm sorry, upper management needs to, and I think it's his belief that he's just there to make personnel decisions. No, upper management, I'm sorry, you have a responsibility to deliver something to the fans. That's wins. If you can't deliver wins, it's your responsibility to deliver expectations, whether it's easy or not. We all have difficult parts of our jobs, but that doesn't mean we don't do them. And I don't know if you agree with this, and this is a debate that's been had for years and years. Is it upper management, like anybody besides the players, those above the players, is it their responsibility to deliver explanations to the fans when things don't go wrong? Is it their obligation?
No, they're not obligated. Does it make sense from a marketing standpoint and a business perspective? Absolutely. But you have to control the message so that it is a central message. And we don't have to look far to see who is the best at this in this market, and it's the New England Patriots. And I'll tell you who it started with before the Crafts bought the team. Bill Parcells was a master at dealing with the media and being able to do coach speak, which basically is BS without saying anything, but it sounds really intelligent and sounds really good and makes for great copy. Okay, great. The other thing that is the most important thing when you are in marketing, winning. Everybody knows if you win, your marketing department's brilliant. If you lose, we don't even notice them.
Again, we're talking with Jimmy Young of Snap Call Sports. And so just to look around the league now, touch on some other NHL topics. And the big one coming out of this weekend, It was on national television. I'm sure the league loved that. Minnesota Wild, Detroit Red Wings, Gustav Nyquist, after trying to get in a fight, couldn't really get into it, decides to take his frustration out on Jared Spurgeon, gives him a high stick to the face. If you haven't seen it, the video is all over Twitter. Jimmy, you saw it on delay. I just showed it to you. As of right now, nothing's been said on a penalty. He will have a meeting with the league early this week. The rumor is they're looking at 6 games. First of all, what do you think the penalty is for this? Should he have been allowed to finish the game, which all he got was a 4-minute penalty? And if you're handing down the suspension, what is it here?
Seems to me in that NHL rule book, there is a intent to injure game misconduct in the rule book. If that play isn't a game misconduct, something is wrong in hockey. And 6 games is not enough. You know, that's one thing about hockey. They protect their eyes. They know that, you know, they could give up some teeth because they've got, what, 32 teeth. You know what I mean? I mean, you're not a hockey player unless you lose a tooth or two, right?
Or seven.
But
or eight.
You only have 2 eyes. And it's why you've had a lot of the shields that you see. And that brings the sticks up. This was a deliberate high stick to the guy's face and near his eye, right?
Again, if you haven't seen the play, go watch it. There's a little bit of a cross check right before. It was ticky-tacky. You could have called it. You could have not. But both players were involved in, you know, a couple sequences before and some guys trying to fight. Now, as we've seen in the NHL this year, they've really put the clamps down on allowing players to go at it. We talk about a lot on Snap Call, especially with Matt Doloff of 98.5 The Sports Hub and CBS Sports Radio. He's been big on this. You can go read him. He's got some great pieces on halting fighting. The NHL halting fighting is actually a bad thing because then these guys go out and they get their aggression out in other ways, like toppling goalies like Alex Burrows did this weekend, or you see this dangerous high stick. Is it actually counterintuitive? Does it make the game more violent, more unnecessarily violent if you get rid of fighting? Because I think it does.
That's a great question. I think they have to get rid. I've said this before. Should they take fighting out of hockey? Yes, but it will never be out of hockey. And by that, I mean, don't make it a 5-minute penalty. Make it a game misconduct and a suspension for the next game.
So you just want to kill off the idea of having goons in hockey?
Yes, completely. Doesn't make sense.
But that's the thing. How beloved was Sean? Look at the movie Goon itself. There's a whole movie about it. They're coming out with the sequel. How can you? That is the best part of hockey.
You will never appeal to the casual American sports fan that has money with fighting in the game.
I know a lot of people who started watching hockey just for the fighting. And they won't watch the playoffs. They'll only watch the regular season.
And there was a time in my life where I didn't want to miss a fight that the Bruins were in. I get that. But I think now if you look at the bigger picture, the hockey as a game is a great skating game. I personally love international hockey because I like the bigger sheet of ice because you see more skating. And to me, that is an awesome display of athleticism, the hockey players. But I get it. Look, the Garden
can't
used to have small ice.
Can't you have both?
Yeah, well, my point is, you can have a high stick like that, and somebody's going to come along and take that game suspension and that game misconduct, okay? Because that was an intent to injure that was not called. That's certainly ruled. I would go after the guy, and I'm a nonviolent guy.
Let's say you're angry with a guy on the ice. You can either fight him and lose this game in the next game, or you can try to take his eye out.
You can also check him into the boards. Perfectly.
If the players are going to do something illegal, if there's going to be some form of illegal retaliation, why not make it something that you can easily... One guy knocks the other guy to the ice, the officials step in, they break it up. It's a time-honored tradition. They both get their anger out. Maybe you kick them out for the rest of the game? Fine. What is it, 10 minutes right now? Fine. You can't... If you make it... You're right. Players are going to fight one way or the other. If you make the penalty too harsh, they're going to go to other means, and frankly, fighting is relatively easy to control. Other things, quicker actions, more violent actions might not be. Spearing a guy with your stick. We've seen guys try to cut others with skates. Happy Gilmore was the first person ever suspended for taking his skate off and trying to stab somebody with it. If you don't get that reference, Google it.
I get the reference. I'm just like, where did you get that?
I'm old enough. We've got Goon. We've got Happy Gilmore. I'll try to work one more in before we're done. We've got like another 2 minutes left in this segment.
You're talking about Slapstick? You're talking about Slapshot? Slapshot the movie?
No, Goon and Happy Gilmore.
What about Slapshot?
I was going to get there, maybe.
Okay. Go ahead.
My point is, if you take out fighting, there's going to be some other form of retaliation. It's easy to bring two guys up that are beating the crap out of each other. It's harder to break up a guy when he's just going to take the sharp end of his stick and throw it into another guy's face. You can't break that up as easy. Let them fight. Have control over it. If it's going to be violence, if you're that worried about it, you better make sure it's controlled violence, controllable violence. It's like putting automated drivers in demolition derby cars. No, you want human drivers so if something goes wrong, you can stop it.
Now, that's a great analogy. But until they get rid of fighting in the game, it will never catch on as a major sport in this country. It's a major sport in Boston and Minnesota and in Canada, okay? But it is not ever going to be accepted by the casual sports fans.
I would counter, how much have people picked up on UFC? How popular has UFC
gotten? But UFC, you know what you're going to get. You got two guys beating the crap out of each other in a stream.
It's an unexpected...
I don't watch that. I think UFC and MMA has ruined boxing. It's completely taken boxing out of the sports.
I mean, I'll agree with you on that, but it has a huge audience. It's wildly popular.
It's because people are violent and they hate each other.
Exactly. Hockey needs to play into the fighting. You watch this game and a UFC event might break out in the middle of it. You don't have to pay pay-per-view for it. It's just there. It's one guy punching another guy. Doesn't get any better than that. There's your boxing. There's your MMA. There's your UFC. People will pay hundreds of dollars to watch Ronda Rousey get her ass kicked on a Saturday night. Guess what? You can watch two guys do the same thing on a sheet of ice, wearing knives on their feet. Publicize that. Don't get rid of it.
Get rid of it. I want to make a buck if I'm an NHL owner. I'm in it to
so
make money.
So put the fights on pay-per-view. The second it goes to pay-per-view, you got to punch in your credit card number. Anyway, and you know we're not that far away from all sports being pay-per-view. Anyway, that is going to do it for Jimmy Young of Snap Call Sports. Thank you very much for joining us, Jimmy.
Make love, not fight. Come on, people.
Unless it's hockey. Unless it's hockey. You are listening to Calling It, a Snap Call Sports production. We will be right back.
Calling It is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Calling It, third and final segment. We're now joined by Ross Kelly of Snap Call Sports, all the way from beautiful Houston, Texas. Ross, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, Ross, we're going to close it up with a new segment here on Calling It. We're going to call it Call It Like It Is. Five topics, 5 minutes. You're going to call it like it is. Give us the truthful statement on these big headlines, both in the world of sports and pop culture. And then we'll ask you to call it, make a big time, way too early prediction on the situation. So first off, in the NBA, the whole feud between Charles Oakley and James Dolan, the Knicks legend, kicked out of Madison Square Garden for getting into an altercation with the Knicks owner at a game. Ross, call it like it is.
Dolan is just being petty about this. He said he kicked out Oakley because he was being loud and yelling profanities at him. Well, then if that's the case, he could kick out 20,000 other fans in MSG. I mean, because they all feel that same way about him.
And then here's a prediction we have for you. What happens next? Charles Oakley attends a game at Madison Square Garden, or the Knicks win a playoff series?
Wow. I'd say Oakley attends a game.
Number two, Tiger Woods. He had to pull out of his own tournament this week, pulled out of two tournaments coming up here as we head towards the Masters. Seems like less and less people are in the camp of Tiger Woods ever winning a major again. Ross, call it like it is.
For Tiger, I do not see him winning another major. It'd be a surprise if he can win another tournament. It seems when he plays, he doesn't play well, and then he rarely finishes a tournament. So either show up and not play well or show up and get hurt.
So here's the prediction. What happens next for Tiger Woods after golf? Is he going to become a commentator? Is he going to maybe get into acting, has been rumored, into business? What's next for Tiger if he can't golf anymore?
I see the business role. I don't really see him in front of a camera. I see him kind of taking on a role similar to what Kobe Bryant's been doing this past year or half year. Tiger has a lot of business interests in both where he lives in Florida and in California. So I think he'll definitely be on the business side.
Next one, SportsCenter introduced a new format, the SC6, as ESPN continues to try to tailor-make different hours of SportsCenter for different talent. Ross, call it like it is.
I think I like the concept. I was a big fan of Scott Van Pelt when he got his own show, and I haven't seen that much of the new one of Jamel and Michael, but I enjoyed watching his and hers. ESPN seems to be moving more into personality-driven shows instead of just the highlights and things like that. because you can watch highlights pretty much anywhere on your phone, on an app, anywhere. So bringing in personalities of their anchors, it's a good idea. And then they also incorporate other elements such as pop culture and music and movies. So it's not just about sports.
Who would be the worst ESPN talent, current or former, to tailor a sports center around?
Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, man, you're going way back. That's a good one. There you go. I wasn't even thinking of that. I was in the Skip Bayless category. Up next, the MLB is talking about changing extra innings to start with a runner on second base in an effort to decrease game times. Ross, call it like it is.
I'm not a fan of it. Putting a runner on second base, it just seems like it's messing with the intention and the laws of the game. I'm not a fan of college football and how they start them off in the 25. Just putting a runner on second base, it kind of takes out the fun of the game. And all you have to do is bunt a runner over to third, and then with one out, there's like eight different ways where a runner can score from third. So I think they should just play it like it is. If they do happen to go that route and want to put a runner on second base, they should maybe wait until the 12th inning or so and just play a normal couple of extra innings like we've always seen. But I'm not really a fan of giving the offense an advantage like that of putting a runner on second base.
Can you name another sport that could make a comparable rule change, hypothetically, in another sport that would be just as damaging?
I'd say in soccer, if they cut the field in half, and so instead of going the full length of the field, they put a goal at midfield, and basically it's like an under-6 soccer field at that point.
And finally, Sunday night, Rihanna was seen at the Grammys chugging out of a diamond-covered flask. I know the show had its difficulties, but I don't know if it was that bad. Ross, call it like it is.
I think Rihanna knew she was just there to have fun. I didn't think she was expecting to win, even though I believe she was nominated. But in all honesty, she can't compete with the likes of Adele or Beyonce when it comes to these female pop stars or these female singers. So she just went there to have a good time, and she brought a little friend with her, I see.
So if Rihanna is throwing back who knows what out of a flask that costs more than my car, what was Kanye West doing during the show?
Something with Kim Kardashian that we can't repeat on this podcast.
All right, Ross Kelly, thank you very much for joining us. You can catch Ross on Snap Call Sports, available for iPhone or Android. Thank you, Ross.
All right, thanks, Alex.
And that will do it for us this week on CallNet. I'd like to thank Jimmy Young, Mike Reese, and Ross Kelly for tuning in. Next week, we get into the MLB previews. Don't miss it. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It.
You've been listening to Callin' It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.